It's March 26, 2014. This is our monthly Edgewalker teleconference, and we're doing something special this month. Our guest is Ken Kasha, and Ken is doing a workshop with us called Building the Bridge to Your Inner Wisdom. And we are going to do a quick check-in. We've got people calling in now. So what I'll do is ask you to check in by saying your name and where you're calling from, and then ask you to mute by hitting star 6 so we won't have so much background noise. So I'm Judy Neal. I'm calling from Fayetteville, Arkansas.
Lilia Garcia, Laredo, Texas.
Tim Young, Portland, Oregon.
Dr. Amy Mullins.
Go ahead.
Amy Mullins, Farmington Hills, Michigan.
Dr. Lynn Bourget, Scottsdale, Arizona.
Louis Griggs, San Francisco, California.
Alice.
Lynn. Anguilla.
Ed Williams.
There was an Alice?
Yes.
Alice, go ahead. Say that again.
Alice.
And where are you calling from?
I'm calling from New York City.
All right, great. Welcome.
Thank you.
And Ed Williams.
Hi, Ed. Welcome.
How are you doing?
From Fayetteville, Arkansas.
That's me.
Uh-huh. Anyone else?
Okay, Lynn Birnbaum, Anguilla, Indies.
Yes, Lynn. All right, great. Thank you.
Yes, thank you.
Okay, I think we'll go ahead and get started to give Ken the maximum amount of time. So it's my great pleasure to introduce Ken Kasha to you. Ken, how long have we known each other? It's got to be close to 15, 17 years.
I've been thinking that myself this morning, Judy, and I think it was early 2002 or 3 when I came to a meeting with Chris Jensen and Dr. Pat Barry, and we were visiting you in East Haven. You had a meeting talking about spirituality in the workplace, and that was my first time.
Yeah, I think that was in the 90s. I was still doing those meetings, so it had to have been before then.
Wow.
But anyway, I'm
listening to Lynn and Lewis about Old Holman Week. It's amazing. I've been since 1971 with Silva, and here I am. I'm not even sure when I first met you. It seems like yesterday.
Well, we've stayed in touch, and you've been really supportive of the work I've done on spirituality in the workplace, and your work is absolutely relevant to spirituality in the workplace and spirituality and the integration of life and higher consciousness. And so Ken is a teacher of teachers in the Silva
Mary
mindset.
Leslie.
Hi, welcome. And so I'm just introducing Ken Kasha. And Ken, anything else you want to tell us about your background before you get started with the workshop today? And again, welcome. Thank you so much for offering to do this for us.
Oh, it's my pleasure, Judy. In fact, I want to say you have honored me by allowing me this opportunity. And everybody on the call has honored me with their presence. And in fact, I think we've honored each other. So, I'm really here because although when I first started in this field in 71, I didn't really have a clear vision or understanding of what we really were about. And over the years, I've come to realize it's really about, you know, raising our consciousness. The reason why I'm so attracted to you and your work and some of the outstanding people I've met through you are that there's so much discussion and serious interest in sustainable futures, looking at, you know, creating a world where everybody wins, that works, that we can sustain. And I think that's so relevant. That's part of, in my opinion, you know, raising our consciousness to pay attention, you know, to what works, what's ethical, what's responsible, what doesn't. And that's, to me, what the work I do with Silva is about, is I hope sincerely that somehow, some way, by guiding people through our dynamic meditations and the nature of the work, that as people become more self-sufficient, more self-reliant, by developing skills, by recognizing who we are in relationship to the universe, that we'll begin to pay more attention to taking care of not only ourselves, but each other and the planet. So, yes, this is what I do. It's my career. You know, it's my vocation, my avocation with that. So I would just, you know, want people to know that I'm sitting here, well, or standing and sitting here with you, as somebody who's been an avid, voracious reader, practitioner. Silva is my first love, although I'm very open and interested in collaborating with others. I think, like, for example, your term, edgewalkers, there are a few people on the call who I suspect came through my contacts who may not know what an edgewalker is. And I wonder, Judy, if you would, you're so articulate the way you describe edgewalkers, because I think it's very appropriate for our topic today. Would that be okay?
Yeah, thanks, Ken, because you, I mean, that's really in your spirit of collaboration, of looking at where is the intersection and the synchronicities and the possibilities that can emerge from things that each of us are called to do and how we can work together. And there's several people on this phone call who are exactly in alignment with that kind of collaboration and the idea of playing together. So edgewalkers are people who walk between worlds and who have a real desire to build a bridge between different worldviews, different paradigms. And they always are looking over the edge, looking beyond the horizon to see what would emerge next. And I believe that spirituality or consciousness plays a very important role in someone being an edge walker and being on the leading edge. It gives them their edge. It's a use of our full gifts and potential as human beings to use these other forms of consciousness that we don't normally tap into in day-to-day life. But when we do, life gets much more joyful and creative and generative. So that's my basic definition of edgewalkers.
Hmm. Well, if I may go back to that, part of why I'm here also today is I remember when you first released your book, Judy, and when you were defining edgewalkers, as I remember, I was going through a period of feeling alienated. In fact, I would admit, and maybe others can relate to this, I think my whole, for the past 43 years, I don't mean that in a negative sense, alienated. I mean it in a sense that, well, for example, when I first heard of Silva, it's like I knew I found what I'd been looking for, but I had no clue I was looking for anything, let alone what I found. It was, for me, a very strong kinesthetic feeling. It was a feeling like, it was like a liberating, it was a feeling that liberated me, my spirit, and I felt joyful and directed and focused. And I was born and raised in Brooklyn, so my Brooklyn came out, and I started freaking out, thinking, oh God, what they put in the water? And I can remember telling my mother and father, because I needed the tuition for the class, and my mother, when it used to be called Silva Mind Control, and it's always meant by Jose Silva, self-control, self-awareness, thinking for yourself, making more intelligent decisions based on the truth of what's really going on and not the manipulations that is a whole nother topic that we're all well aware of. And so here I mentioned this, and my mother, I was raised in a Roman Catholic, very dogmatic Roman Catholic background. My cousin at the time when he was alive was a bishop, a missionary in Brazil, Franciscan. We have in our family lineage a pope and a cardinal. I was being groomed. Every Italian mother's dream is that their son will become a priest. And here I'm telling them about mind control. And my mother nearly passed out. She turned white as a ghost, took out her rosary beads, and started praying for me. And when you defined edgewalkers, that's what it's been like over the years. You know, you have a variety of experience from people. I do find, though, that now people are far more open to this work. And now, instead of making the sign of the cross or backing away, you might get, oh, that's interesting. And there may not be much more of a conversation. So in looking at that, been my experience that we fellow edgewalkers are pioneers, you know, who strive to make a difference, who strive to attune to our authentic self and to make that manifest in the world. And I really, in my experience, feel that is an art. It takes skills. It takes not just knowledge, but skills that we, and a practice. It seems to be part of our evolutionary task, if you will. I also suspect that edgewalkers, like myself, are very intuitive, are very attuned to their gut, I mean, call it what you will, and maybe even very sensitive. And that sensitivity can serve us, or it can be an obstacle, depending whether we're controlling it. So as we look at our topic today, creating a bridge to inner wisdom, well, let me just give an overview. We want to, you know, define that and take a look at focusing your intuition. And I've worked with well over 100,000 people. It's been, you know, I've been 25 different nations. I am the trainer of the trainers. I'm their lead guy in the organization. And I only say that because I'm in constant dialogue with my colleagues. I'm constantly in the trenches, so to speak, with people from every walk of life, just about, from the neuroscientists, MDs, to psychics and mediums, all in the same class, which is very cool. It's a lot of fun. And you begin to recognize that there are patterns, and then in doing further research over the years, you recognize there are principles that can guide us, because often when we feel something, whether it be in our gut, in our heart, or whatever we want to call it, our intuition. Now neuroscience talks about the anterior cingulate as being a part of the brain dealing with intuition. Regardless, somehow, some way, we can elicit information beyond our objective physical senses. However, there are a lot of biases. So one of the objectives is, how do we make distinctions between what is the truth that we can be guided by, you know, what's truly wisdom to serve us, and what's maybe just a projection, you know, wishful thinking or fear that's distorting the truth. So in 90 minutes or less, what I intend to do is give a bit of a, let's take a look at some definitions of intuition, some applications, some ideas, and then I recommend that everybody please take some notes, especially, and I'll reemphasize that when I think it's important. And then your assignment will be to take these principles with you and begin to apply them in whatever way, you know, you best can. How's that sound, Judy? Fair enough?
BJ, am I happy?
Hey, JR.
BJ. Hi, Ken.
BJ. I think Judy muted herself, so I'll just...
I did. I muted myself. But yes, that sounds great. Thank you.
Yeah, well, see how respectful you are. That's one of the things I've always appreciated about you. You know, when I attend your programs and I listen on the call, and that to me means more than anything else. You know, to me, that's what spirituality is about, being respectful of each other. So thank you. You're basically letting me do my thing.
Oh, yeah.
You know what you're doing,
and I just can't wait to hear from you. And this is so much for my own life and growth right now. So this beautiful. I'm sure other people feel the same way.
Well, let me ask everybody then, as I talk, please pay not so much attention to my words or the ideas, although they're important. Pay more attention to what's going on inside you. And first, let's take a look at some ideas, some definitions of intuition. And what's most important is, in your own experience, you know, how are you relating to this? How have you used your own intuition or your own gut? And then you'll see. But first I want to go through, for example, I've defined intuition as a bridge to your higher awareness, the part of you that rests on the foundation of all knowledge, all wisdom, all truth, all love, and infinite possibilities. It's a little bit wordy. That's what I came up with, though. If you read someone like John Holland, who's a New Englander, fellow New Englander like Judy and I, in his books, he's defined intuition as the language of the soul. We're all born aware with a profound sense of inner knowing. It's one of the greatest gifts we possess, which keeps us connected to our higher selves, the universe, and to our divine spirit. for the people on the call, fellow Edgewalkers, who have taken the Silver Program in the past, you can remember that in the early days especially, we were sharply criticized and ostracized, even by people like Dr. J.B. Ryan from Duke University and other leading Edge scientists, that you can't train somebody to have ESP or intuition. You know, it's something that only gifted people have. And with all due respect, I've met and worked with the best of the best. I'm never really impressed with an individual's, quote, intuitive or psychic ability. I'm more impressed with what they have learned to do with it, to solve a problem, to innovate, to creatively express. I mean, I'm sure everyone would agree, artists, musicians are highly intuitive because part of what they're doing is that creative expression and interpreting their feeling, their perspective into an art form, whether it be written or music or sculpture. In fact, many of our early instructors, like our very first one, Nelda Sheets, who was my trainer, you know, of trainers way back when, she was the very first, she's an artist, and she was the very first Silver instructor way back in the mid-60s. So that being said, reminds me of a quick story. And I'll ask everybody, I wish we were live. I really miss seeing people's faces and looking at people's eyes. So let's do it virtually. And I'll ask everybody to imagine somewhere here in America, one of our famous U.S. strip malls. You know, those buildings that are not very pretty. They're usually one story high, and there could be anywhere from 2 to 3 to 10 or more small stores side by side. In this particular small shopping plaza, there are 3 stores, 3 different merchants, and they're each fairly competitive. And they understandably want business. They're looking to drive traffic, you know, into their store. So store owner number one on the far left in this building, he has an idea, a creative idea, how to drive more traffic to his store. He makes a big handmade sign, and he posts the sign smack dab in the middle of his window so everybody can see it clearly, and you can guess what the sign says. Big sale. Funny, everybody loves a sale. Some of us on the phone have had interactions where our honey will come home and say, I saved 40%. And then the other honey will say, yeah, that's true, but you would have saved 100% if you didn't buy anything. So we know that even people who are not shoppers can easily be motivated by a sale. So meanwhile, it's working. People are coming into his store more than before. And on the far right of this same building, store owner number 2, we'll call him, he's concerned. He wants some of that traffic. So he gets creative, and he makes a big handmade sign, posted smack dab in the middle of his window. And his sign says, you can guess, year-end clearance. Even bigger sale. Everything must go. And sure enough, that works. Well, here's our friend in the middle, store owner number 3. He's watching all this activity. Understandably, he's concerned. He wants a piece of the action, too. He's looking for customers. So he gets creative. He happens to be a silver graduate. What else? He puts his 3 fingers together and gets an idea. He, too, makes his own handmade sign. And he makes this big, huge sign, puts it smack dab in the window so everybody can see it. And his says, main entrance. Now, ideally, if I could hear you, you'd be laughing. And if you're not, fake it. It's good for your health. Thank you. So was that creative? Sure, I think so, very. Was it intuitive? I don't know. Was it psychic? Who knows? Was it innovative? In fact, I'll do my best, and I always do, to avoid plain semantics. Often I have people from the academic community in class, engineers, you know, people with more PhDs than I knew existed, and got to be very careful because much of this work is heartfelt, it's soulful work. It's not really an intellectual process. So the first thing we know is that somehow, some way, we have within us wisdom that can guide us with ideas. And what we're looking for with our work, for example, I'm hoping that even our short time together will help each of us to be more correct, you know, more in that flow. So here's a couple of other quick quotable quotes. I found this interesting. Better than 20 years ago, I was reading in various journals that both Harvard University's business school and the leading European business school, INSEAD, have concluded from research that the two most effective tools for the 21st century executives are meditation and intuition. And I'm sure we've all noticed there has been a massive amount of current research in the recent years about the benefits, the value of having a practice, you know, a meditation practice in our lives. So here's an example of how very often edge walkers are on the leading edge. You know, they're, in a sense, trendsetters. They're often way ahead of the times. Some of you may remember when Faith Popcorn wrote her best-selling book, The Popcorn Experiment. Many futurists, in my opinion, I think, sure, they recognize patterns, and I think it's a combination of their logic, pattern recognition, and also their intuition, their ability to creatively elaborate, to follow it. For example, she talked about the cocooning of America. And now retailers are all complaining that people are buying more and more online. People are more and more watching movies at home, online, and going out less. If you know anybody who conducts live seminars, some of you on the call, you've noticed a pattern that attendance, even with the biggest names in the industry, is down relative to what it was 10 years ago, let alone 20 years. Another quote, Dr. Henry Mintzberg, School of Business Management at McGill University. Again, this is better than 20 years ago. He did that famous study of 200 top-level corporate managers, and he suggested that organizational effectiveness lies in a blend of clear-headed logic and powerful intuition. And just a couple more. I'm going through these quotes because I'm asking you to think from how do you relate to this? What does it mean? Look from different points of view, different perspectives, to build on our self-awareness as to what is that truth for us with respect to this inner wisdom we have. One of my heroes, Dr. Andrew Weil, he often reminds people that the history of science makes clear that the greatest advancements in man's understanding of the universe are made by intuitive leaps at the frontiers of knowledge and not by intellectual walks along well-traveled paths. So I went to the dictionary, Funk and Wagnalls, and they said intuition, their definition, a spontaneous phenomenon which cannot be contrived or forced, the act or faculty of knowing directly without the use of the rational process. You'll notice I'm purposely doing this and using intuition as a term more so than, or gut feeling, hunch, than ESP, although sure there are variations. ESP was like mind control. You know, the media in Hollywood has so distorted the truth of what it is that in some people's minds there's a lot of not positive association with terms like that. So if you read the philosopher Krishnamurti, he says intelligence highly awakened is intuition, which is the only true guide in life. And my favorite quote from Bucky Fuller, R. Buckminster Fuller, the famous architect and philosopher, intuition is like cosmic fishing. And I'm sure so many of us on the call sometimes wonder, can I trust this feeling? So let me give you an example. Some human experiences. Some of you may remember in your reading, I don't recall the exact book where I read, I was reading a consultant who does similar work, and he was talking about, in history, a businessman, an entrepreneur, who was, while taking a shower, has a flash, an idea. And it was a business idea. And the idea was to manufacture pandas, you know, stuffed pandas. And he just felt right. He got very excited. So he immediately, later that day, visited with his partners and his, you know, business associates. And when he told them of the idea, they said, what? people in America don't even know what a panda is. And besides that, the teddy bear has really captured the market. And, you know, we need another stuffed animal like we need, you know, a hole in the head. So they poo-pooed the idea. Nobody was interested. Nobody would invest. He didn't listen. He felt so strong about this in his instinct, if you will, entrepreneurial instinct, that he sunk a small fortune into beginning to manufacture stuffed pandas. And while he was doing that, this is during the time historically when Richard Nixon was president of the U.S., Nixon went and made that famous trip to China. And when he came back, he brought with him a new interest in Chinese culture and everything Chinese. And of course, the panda is the Chinese animal. And you know how we Americans can be, very trendy. And all of a sudden, overnight, the major zoos in America began to import pandas. And back to our friend, the entrepreneur, his sales went through the roof. Classic example. How about you? Ideas that you've had. We see this often in science, in the arts, creative problem solving. Some would even suggest that master chess players, with their pattern recognition, where they can think so many moves ahead, possibilities. So that being said, everybody please allow a deep breath. And just let's put our hearts and our minds together. And let's take a look at these principles and some of the challenges, the obstacles in the way that we need to be conscious of and be conscious of. And then the principles. So for example, there are three primary channels of perception. Linguistically speaking, when we're communicating, we know we have the auditory, the kinesthetic, and the visual. Those are considered the three primary. So when somebody objectively speaking is talking with us and you hear them say, I hear you loud and clear, it's as loud as that church bell, that's someone who maybe is a little more dominantly auditory. Somebody who's kinesthetic will often talk about the energy they feel, the vibrations. You know, they talk about their feelings or they'll walk away from someone and say, I don't know, there's just something going on with that person. Or maybe you've done this with a dear friend. You look at them and say, are you okay? And they say, oh, yeah, I'm fine. And you feel like you can cut the tension with a knife. And then, of course, there's the visual. Somebody who's more visual in their communication style would often, you know, give visual images such as, it's as clear as that blue sky. Well, interestingly enough, researchers in the field of parapsychology, people, you know, who study intuition, ESP, recognize that we also have these three primary communication channels from a subjective point of view. When it's auditory, it's called clairaudience. Again, not the Hollywood version. Clair means from the French, clear hearing. The kinesthetic would be clairsentience or clear feeling. And the visual, clairvoyance or clairvoyance, clear vision. So as you listen to that, what have you noticed about yourself? For example, I'm a dominant kinesthetic. For me, doing these virtual, I've been for the past 4 years doing programs like this, and I often remind people, you know, it's not my favorite way to teach or to conduct myself, because when you're live, there's so much more going on. There's so much more in terms of the feeling, if you will, etc. So it's important that we honor who we are. We can develop all the channels. It takes practice, and with the right knowledge and practice and control. However, it can't be forced. It's something that's very developmental. And the first step is to recognize what's our dominant sense, honor that, trust it, embrace it, and use it as a strength. And interestingly enough, the others will follow in time as we continue to exercise.
Ken, this is Judy. I have a question. Is it okay to interrupt you?
Yes, absolutely. Please.
You know, when you were talking about the three channels of perception, I always thought I was visual, but with your description, I think I'm much more kinesthetic. But when I have intuitive hits, they're almost always visual. I see things. And so it seems like, you know, on the physical plane, well, the sensing energy, that sort of thing seems more natural to me. But on the, you know, the more intuitive plane, it just really seems visual. Is it possible for someone to be different, or is it only one?
Oh, no. That's a great question, because we all have all of these faculties. It seems to be that one is stronger or more dominant or more developed than the other. So that's the same thing with myself, too. I'm far more visual. When I first went through the Silver Program and we were doing these beautiful creative visualization exercises, I closed my eyes, and it's like they turned the lights out. It was dark. I would have been happy if my little finger tingled, because I was worried and I was, you know, too into my head with that. So it's really a combination of all three. It just, and it could vary from situation to situation. So just, you know, kind of use it as a guideline.
Okay, great. Thank you.
And by the way, and Judy and others on the call, Judy, you have such a beautiful voice. You're also a composer of songs, and you're very, very creative. So what you're describing, I'm not surprised. And I'm sure that there's quite a bit of auditory in there, too. It's just that you might have more one that's a little bit more dominant.
Yeah, actually, when I write songs, I will hear the music in my head, or I'll hear words. So you're right, that I hadn't even thought about it, but the auditory part comes when I'm creative and also when I'm writing. It's almost like taking dictation.
That's so cool.
Yeah, that is so cool.
It's interesting to say that. I'm not much, at this point in time in my life, I haven't manifested much of a writing style. I can remember, though, I work often with visionaries, and although I'm far more visual than I was, it often is challenging for me. For example, Mr. Silver, when he was alive, he made it clear to us, his team. In fact, I was mentored by him. I worked closely with him. You know, he became, in a sense, like the father I never had as far as, you know, doing this work. And he would talk about creating our mission was to, it's like our evolutionary task, and our mission is to create a paradise, or to create heaven on earth. And that still, to this day, is too much. I get overwhelmed by that. So my kinesthetic, because I get caught up in the details, you're like, oh, how the heck are we going to do that? You know, and then you start thinking of all the massive amount of work that we need to do. So we really need a healthy balance of all three, otherwise it can get in the way. So for example, Judy, your question, when we look at these channels of perception, there are different influences that will influence which sense might be more dominant. For example, each of us within the domain of our life's experience, meaning the environment where we spend most of the time. Those of you on the call, if you have not read Dr. Bruce Lipton, any of his work, and The Biology of Belief, it's excellent. It's well worth it. It's a good investment of your time and your resources. And his whole thesis, although he is still considered controversial, his whole thesis is about the environment and nature versus nurturing. And you'll hear thought leaders often reminding us about the environmental influence on each of us with respect to the people we spend most of our time with, that we tend to become more and more like the people or the environment that we spend most of our time in. And neuroscientists, I'm sure, would agree, because they talk also about the mirror neurons and how when we're, especially live, when you're in someone's presence, if you've ever sat before a spiritual leader who truly embraces what some call unconditional love, I haven't met too many people like that, but they do exist. And if you ever have that opportunity, it's beyond words. I mean, just being in their presence. And the neuroscientists would say that there is literally a brain-to-brain-cell-to-brain-cell communication that's not spoken, that's sort of unconscious, if you will. And this is the environment. So when you have someone who has, like me, I was originally trained in engineering at Boston University, and when engineers come into a program, let's say like the Silver Method or similar programs, initially, only initially, it can be a bit of a struggle for them, or a medical doctor who knows what he or she knows as a heart specialist, as a lung specialist, whatever. So within the domain of their life experience, they know certain things to be true. And that makes sense, except sometimes it gets in the way of innovation because we get stuck in those patterns, like this is the reality, you know, grow up, don't let your imagination run wild. And there isn't time to attempt to, but I think most of us can remember throughout our history in medicine alone, there have been from penicillin to all sorts of vaccines that work or medical technology often started with a lot of criticism. Kind of happened by accident. Wasn't looking. So when we look at ourselves, when we look at the environment, our upbringing, our parents, I often tell my story about being raised in a Roman Catholic background because we never talked about stuff like this. You know, you went to church and it was very dogmatic. I think I'm more spiritual now, far more than when I was in the dogmatic practice. That, however, influences what? Our belief systems, the openness, our friends. Cultural conditioning is another big factor. And if we just look at basic Maslow and existentialism, and he talks about survival and security being the core physical drivers, and then we have the meta needs. Well, survival is the number one priority biologically and neurologically. It's how we're wired. Second would be security, being safe, being protected. So what happens is with something like awakening and developing your intuition, we need to be careful because, well, it happens all the time in just about every personal and or spiritual development program, when they're honest about it, people go through, they get psyched, they're charged, they're thrilled, and then they go home to tell their family and friends, coworkers, who maybe have no interest, no belief, and maybe even criticize them, make fun of them. And then what happens is if the individual is not strong enough, doesn't have the self-esteem or the support, they'll tend to slip back into their old patterns, even though they're negative, even though they're unfulfilling, because it's safe. By our very nature, we need to feel safe and secure. And if we're unconscious, it becomes, in my opinion, a horrible problem. It holds us back in our evolution, and we begin to just live in the same old, same old. And we see that now. Everyone says there's a shift going on. And with what's happening with the new realities with climate change, and there are turning points happening, and more and more slow, it's slow but sure, more and more business people are recognizing that much of our business practice is not sustainable. And if we continue on this path, we'll have even more serious problems. And because of that, there's almost like a tug of war. If you look culturally, politically, economically, between so-called new economy, new ways of thinking and managing our lives, and old familiar patterns. So this is a biggie. We could spend days, and some of you have probably even done work in this area, just to refine that. So why is this important to you? In order to clear a path to our higher self, a clear channel, in order to be guided by this wisdom, at least in my opinion, these are obstacles that can get in the way if we are not conscious of it, if we are not self-aware to recognize what's kind of like an anchor pulling us back. And the challenge is when a neural pathway is developed because of the cultural conditioning from while we were in the womb, through our infancy, through adult life, it's not quick fix. And if I may say this, I think all of you on the call, and certainly knowing Judy, I think you'll appreciate this. I am appalled by what I see going on the internet. I'll just say what I see, with all this quick fix mentality. You know, there are so many programs and ideas that, okay, pretty good, but the marketing makes it sound like it's the second coming of Jesus, Moses, Abraham, Nasruddin, everybody. And there is no quick fix. It's a process. It's a lifelong. And third, influence would be our belief systems. So everything we're looking at here contributes to our belief systems, that attitude or statement we make to ourselves privately about what we believe to be true for us. So often people will look at another person and say, wow, she's amazing. What a great voice. I could never sing like that. Or, I couldn't do that. And often those belief systems are very limiting, aren't they? They kind of close the door. And we know how powerful our belief systems can be. So you could read every book. I could read every book. You could listen to me for hours. And it has been my experience in all these years. It's not the information that makes the difference. The information is important. It's what we do with the information and whether we integrate it and make it a part of us, which is what I'm passionate about and why I continue to do the work I do, because that's our interest. So those influences create distortions on the perceptions between what's accurate, reliable, intuitive wisdom, and what's just maybe a projection. So projection might be, a simple example. My wife Barbara and I, we still live here in Connecticut. I teach in Boston, Chicago, and here in Connecticut for the Silver Program. However, in our community, we do, you know, we talked about you become who you spend most of your time with. Well, we do socialize with people who are not interested in this field. I mean, that's okay, and they're people we love. Our children, you know, grew up. We have a, you know, a long history. But it's the funniest thing how I was with the guys, and we're, you know, before going out to dinner, and I said, I don't even remember what I said. I said something about someone or something that I was uncomfortable with. And one of the guys all of a sudden is telling everybody how I hated it. And I never even used that word, and I certainly didn't feel that. Well, that's a projection where people think they know us or they think they know what we're feeling, and they put words into our mouth. I'm sure we've all had that. It can be very frustrating. Often couples in couples therapy will complain about things like that. Well, projection can be, you know, wishful thinking, or it could be ego gratification, you know, because we want to feel good. It really takes courage sometimes to just accept the way things have been up to now. And notice how I said have been, because we can always change or improve it. So let me give you an example. In fact, you can virtually raise your hand. Judy mentioned before about how she's getting more and more, you know, visual at different times. Well, suppose, like in your dreams, we've all noticed that our dreams can be a reflection of what? Our hopes, our aspirations, sometimes our fears, our anxieties. Sometimes God only knows what the dream is, where it's coming from. And sometimes our dreams can be very insightful and even precognitive. Precognitive meaning where we have a sense of something to come, you know, an idea with that. So let's just say that you've had some experience with some precognitive dreams, and you wake up one morning, imagine this now, and you are excited. You can hardly wait to get out of bed and begin the day, because in the dream you saw yourself winning the $10 million lottery. Your phone's ringing off the hook in the dream. You've discovered more family and friends than you ever knew you had. Everyone's got, you know, heard the news. They made the announcement. It's just, it's so real. I mean, like, it's there. You can feel it. You can taste it. So if that were the case, even if you're like me, I'm not a gambler, and I don't even buy lottery tickets. However, if you had such a dream, would you be tempted to spend a dollar or two and go out and buy a lottery ticket? Just raise your hands for yes. And Judy, would you count? That's just me being silly. But virtually we'll count. Most people say, oh, sure, of course. I have nothing, you know, you got to play to win. However, suppose in the dream, I left something out, you saw, yes, you did win, you're convinced. However, before winning, you saw yourself going to the bank, either taking a loan or using your credit card, and taking $10,000 in cash and going all around your community buying $10,000 worth of lottery tickets. Then you win $10 million. That's an incredible rate of return. How many people of you on the call would now go out and buy that, no, excuse me, would go take $10,000 and buy $10,000 worth of tickets? Yeah, right, Ken. What are you, dreaming? Whenever I ask that question, even in front of 10 people, in front of 100 people, most hands go up, yeah, I'd spend a dollar or two. But now, 10,000, what are you, crazy? It's too risky. How do I know that it's really, and that's what I mean by fear. It could be a legitimate insight. It could be true and accurate, but we don't know yet. There's a big risk. And you've heard so often entrepreneurs and business people say very similarly, usually the bigger the risk, the higher the return. So I'm not suggesting we should just all take more and more risk. What I am suggesting is it is an art that we learn how to make distinctions between these different distortions through practice, and that's what the 12 principles that we want to begin to take a look at. So, for example, at the university, a psychology professor in Claremont Graduate University, I always have trouble saying his name, Mulhaly, Sis-Chek Mulhaly, identify what he called, and I believe he coined
it.
Go ahead.
It's chick, like chicken, then sent, S-E-N-T, Mihaly, chick sent Mihaly.
Thank you. And I hope you can get deeper.
And his first name is Mihaly, so the whole thing is Mihaly, chick sent Mihaly.
Well, I confess, I have Hungarian colleagues and people from all over Eastern Europe, and they have said his name, and I just have this mental block to it, I guess. And I think I purposely have it because whenever I'm in class and I do that, most people laugh, and it gives a little comic relief.
Everyone knows they struggled with that one. Yeah, thanks, Kip.
Well, we've all heard this term, flow state, a neurological phenomenon where it seems like the universe has got our back. It doesn't mean we're perfect. It means that we're more and more correct in the right place at the right time. And perhaps you're one of those people, or you know someone who's very lucky. Things always work out for the best for them. I would suggest that these are individuals who are in that flow state. And I believe that it can be cultivated when we have the skills and the development of those skills and put into a practice for that. And just as a simple example, myself, I was setting my schedule for classes in the greater Chicago area. And I do what's called the four-day immersion experience. Our program is a four-day program of what we call civil life systems, civil intuition training. And usually I go Saturday, Sunday, Monday, Tuesday, unless there's a holiday weekend. Well, long story short, I was setting the schedule for Chicago, and that was the logic, and that was what has been working for me. And our Dean Calloway, who at the time was organizing in the area for me, we were debating, and I just couldn't shake the feeling. And about starting, and I said, let's start on Friday, with this versus, the Saturday. And we made a change in our format of the date, very different than what I had been doing. And it was interesting, had I started on the Saturday, there was a major snowstorm, it would have impacted the beginning of our program. Most people were traveling, they're staying in the hotel. So it really became a minor, whereas had I started on Saturday, we never would have been able to start. Now, was that coincidence? Was it good luck? Who knows? But I do know that I did something, and I rarely start on a Friday unless it's a holiday. In fact, I don't at all unless it's a holiday weekend. And this was not a holiday weekend. So for me, that's a point of reference. I'm going to come back to that. So here's some things I'd like you to write down. There are 12 focusing principles, and in even some of the literature, you'll find a lot of common ground here. I would suggest to you that number one principle, most important, would be clear about your intention. It's important that we value the development of our intuition. We are purpose-driven. There's a reason. It's not just about psychic whoopee or look how, intuitive I am. It's about solving a problem, innovating, making a difference, helping someone. Judy may remember, in fact, I think when I met you, I first was experienced course, introduced this book by Jack Hawley, Reawakening the Spirit in Work. If anyone on the call hasn't read it, it goes back a bit. It's very well done. And Jack Hawley talks about, of all things, the Hard Rock Cafe and the man Isaac, the original idealist, who had an idea of bringing people together, bankers and, you know, regular people, business people. But another long story short is, in the original Hard Rock Cafe, and I think they're still up there now, there's a big sign, love all, serve all. And that was his theme. And you look at his training of his people, of his staff, the original Hard Rock, it really embodied and embraced that love all, serve all. People would be queuing in London around the corner, waiting in London's stormy, you know, wet weather, you know, damp, chilly. And he would send his staff out, wait staff out with umbrellas to keep people, and bring them little small samples of hot soup to keep them warm while they're waiting, no charge, to come into the restaurant. And he felt that they were going to honor him with their presence in his restaurant, and they were willing to wait in the bad weather like that, that he should show some respect. And in Hawley's opinion, and I agree with it, it served him where it became a huge success. And then if you know the story, it was then bought out and corporatized, and I haven't been to one in ages for that. But that was the original idea. And if you look at so many different businesses, they have a clear intention, a purpose of serving, of helping someone somehow, some way, as a guiding. Because it can be very difficult, it can be very challenging for many of the things we've discussed. And when times are challenging, we need that fire in our belly, that passion that helps us to tolerate and navigate more effectively the challenges. And if I may say, I've been 43 years, and people often say, how do you do it? Oh my God, how can you teach the same thing? Well, number one, it's the same core principles, but we're constantly, at least I am, constantly updating with new ways and perspectives of understanding the material. But it's not really the same old, because there are different people all the time in a class, and that's what brings it to life. So sometimes I admit I might feel that way until I'm there in a class. And when I look back, and anyone who, we were at a wedding this weekend, and part of the wedding was in Boston, downtown, beautiful, overlooking the harbor. These are friends of ours, and they happen to be friends with a famous opera singer who is a lover of Wagner. And he sang at the wedding for us. And he lives in my community, but I did know him. We met. We were sitting at the same table. So we had some fun talking, and I asked him, I said, if you don't mind me asking, do you feel like you were born to sing opera? And the man is in his 60s. He said, absolutely. I've been singing since I was 12. And I thought that was so cool, because it's not every day that you meet people who haven't changed their careers 2, 3, 4, 10 times, who, you know, are on a mission and are on purpose in their lives. So the point here is that when we have a clear vision and intention, it makes it so much easier to make manifest these intuitive insights with a clear, conscious recognition of them. We have a theme, if I may, just a little plug for Jose Silva, and our theme is enriching the planet by empowering the individual. I believe that as you and I become better individuals, we're helping to create a better world. Because if we're less needy, less demanding, if we're living a more fulfilling life, if we're not plagued with all sorts of struggle financially, health-wise, we'll be more likely to be kinder, more patient with other people. We'll be more likely to be a little bit more compassionate. And if we all just do a little bit more of that, we're going to create a much better world, a better, at least that's my own personal philosophy. Here's someone, I think, Judy, you know this person, Lance Secretan. I don't remember how I was introduced to him, but he wrote The Spark, the Flame, and the Torch. I don't know the man, but I read through his book. It was a real easy, simple, quick read. And he talks about the spark, kind of like the flow state. So some of you maybe can relate to this. Quote, a sudden awareness, a stirring within, an awakening of our potential, a growing enthusiasm, it's long-winded, a realization that we can live large and are capable of changing the world. I think it's beautiful. He goes on further to say, it's our true essence, our authentic self, our soul, what we long for, and when in alignment we are guided joyfully to what some call our destiny, our character, and our calling, which will result in flow, or that flow state. So please allow a deep breath. Number two, focusing principle. Attention and practice. What I mean by that is we need to make the time to pay attention, and I would recommend to journal some of these intuitive insights. You know, when you have a feeling about something and it turns out to be correct or way off base, make note of it and begin to look at, you know, evaluate briefly what were some of the distinctions. It's hard to put in words, and you know, you can listen to people's stories, it inspires us. There's nothing like our own internalized experience with that. And the aim is that we get to a point where I know what I know. I've been there before. I know I can trust this. I'd like to give you a funny example. Well, I think it's funny. I have a silly sense of humor. Dear friends of my wife Barbara and I, they're local Connecticut people here. Her profession is she's a nurse, registered nurse. Now she does a lot more with therapeutic touch. Many of you are familiar with that, perhaps. Anyway, her name is Ann Miner. And Ann came into the Silver class as a reviewer. She's a long-term Silver grad. And she used a technique we call the glass of water to put your subconscious to mind, excuse me, put your subconscious to work while you're sleeping. And Anne wanted to, her goal, unclutter the house. Like my wife and I, they've been living in this community a long time, and they were exploring retirement options. They've been in their home for 30-something years, and they've got a lot of stuff that she was having trouble parting with. Can you relate to that? You know, look in your closet. You may find clothing that you haven't worn in 3, 4, 5 years, maybe, or sweaters. I have a lot of fun. My daughter, who's 22, when she comes home, she'll often go through my armoire and find sweaters. Dad, you've had this for 20 years. When was the last time you wore it? So they're thinking of moving to something smaller, downsizing. So she does this technique, puts her subconscious to work, and an interesting thing happened. The next day morning, her husband, Mark, didn't go into work, and that's very unusual. In all the years they've been together, 30-something years, he's maybe only once, possibly twice, missed work. Because usually if he's sick, even with a high fever, he goes anyway. He's that kind of a guy. But this particular day, he woke up, wasn't feeling well. Nothing really serious, but enough that he didn't go into work. So here he is at home, and he had the inclination to go downstairs. They have two or three levels, and he went down to their basement. And when he did, the floor was soaking wet. One of the pipes, a fitting on one of the pipes, came loose, broke, and was now filling the basement. Now, you know where I'm going with this. Had he gone to work like he usually did, no matter how he felt, it would have been devastating. He would have come home, and the flood would have been, you know, 100 times worse all those hours. But meanwhile, he didn't. And he was able to, you know, repair it, shut off the water, get a repair. And then when he called Anne and told her what happened, she's quite a beautiful person, she said, I felt a calm. I felt a relief. I mean, I don't know how many people would respond like that, but she did. And she didn't know why. Until she came home and they began to clean up because they filled 10 large, huge contractor bags of all the damage, you know, the damaged goods in the basement. So what happened? She uncluttered a lot of stuff, but not quite the way she would have preferred to have done it. So the hidden message is be careful what you ask for and be willing to accept it, or be more specific. It's just another example. So how about yourself? Are you paying attention to insights like that, ideas that go beyond pure logic, that go beyond anything you've seen or felt or have a past experience with? It's important that we make the time as part of it and journal it. If you can attend, I mean, it'd be very cool, guys. I mean, it is my hope that you find this stimulating and you're interested in going further and coming into a silver class. I think it's the greatest. I haven't seen a program come close to what we're doing. I mean, it's a very cool program. Or do something, exercises, because it can be developed. It's just going to take you valuable time. Number three, again, allow a deep breath. The third focusing principle you want to write down is relaxation or inner silence, or you could say meditation. You've perhaps noticed if you're a meditator and you've been practicing, people who regularly meditate not only do not look their age and age more gracefully because of all the health benefits to heart rate, breathing, you know, the blood pressure, cholesterol levels, blood sugar level, I mean, there's a whole huge list. Not only that, but if you're a regular meditator, it's very natural, it's like an intermediary step to the higher self, because we're quieting the logic, we're quieting all the input that's coming into the brain. It's a sensory deprivation exercise. If you remember Dr. John Lilly, years ago I studied with him when I first started Silva, and he was doing this early sensory deprivation exercises by minimizing, limiting the amount of sensory input, objective sensory input to the brain. The brain naturally will slow down brain waves. We move in a sleep-like state. We move in the direction that psychologists have often defined as the subconscious. Call it what you will. We call it an inner state. And it's that inner silence that often is a reservoir of truth, authenticity, of the, you know, who we really are and our connection in the universe. So meditation is a tool, of course, relaxation techniques. There are so many forms of meditation. Enjoying a nature walk. One of my favorite things is to walk along the river or walk on the beach with no shoes on and socks, and just to feel the sand and to feel, you know, the waves coming in, and that there's just something about the breaking waves. Last fall I went to the Baltic Sea. I do work in Latvia and Lithuania, and my partner's there. We had a couple of days off. They treated me and took me to a resort area on the Baltic Sea, and it's a very unique, the way the waves come in and the surf. And that's where they find a lot of amber that washes up on the shore. It was fun to walk around finding amber. But it was just something about that. It was a repetitive motion and that soothing calm. Expressive dance. Expressive writing. You know, Judy mentioned before as an example of when she's writing, it's like automatic writing, as if someone's dictating to her. You may remember the famous story of Jonathan Livingston Seagull and Richard Bach. He told the story when he was reviewing the silver class in New York City, and Harper's Bazaar was doing a story on the silver program and interviewing him. And he was a starving writer at the time. And he's asking himself, how am I going to pay the bills? What can I do to turn this around? And he was in a relaxing environment. I believe it was like a beach-like environment, if I remember correctly. And that's when he heard Jonathan Livingston Seagull in his head.
Hello.
She just lost.
And he went to the... Hello.
Yeah. So she's been, and you know...
Hello.
That's Marianne, who's just been trying to join us. Hi, Marianne.
Hi. We've been trying to join since 12 o'clock.
Oh, bless your heart. I'm going to get you the number. Ken is going over 12 principles for focusing to increase our intuition, our connection to our higher self. He's on number 3, talking about relaxation for inner silence. And I'm going to mute you so that we don't have background noise.
Okay.
Yep.
All right.
Carry on, Ken. Thank you.
You are. And those of you who just joined us, Marianne and others, thank you. I'm so sorry to hear that you had trouble signing in. However, you made it. Better late than never. And so this focusing principle, we talk about relaxation, inner silence, being and making it a practice somehow, being an intermediary step to our higher self. It's part of the awakening process. Music. Maybe one of the things I like about you, Judy, is music. I find it just, I don't even have words, it just talks to my soul. When I'm on the road, especially when I'm on the road and I'm by myself in different countries where I don't even speak the language, you know, I know a few sentences, I always look for a place where there's some live music, that I can listen and enjoy. It's just something about it that's just so calming and relaxing. And I find some of my best ideas come when I'm listening to music. And believe it or not, even if it's, dare I say, heavy metal, not too much, but somewhat, but classic rock. So stilling the mind serves as what? A grounding. So we're listening in the silence. Breath work can help. Contemplative practices, looking at the stars, you know, taking a nature walk. These are all things to facilitate that inner quiet, to help increase the volume of our inner wisdom. Again, allow another deep breath. And the fourth one I'd like you to write down, focusing principle to awaken and refine your intuition, be honesty and avoiding self-bias. Now, what do I mean by that is, I think it was Buckminster Fuller who said, dare to be naive. It takes courage to admit sometimes we made a mistake or that we might be wrong. I mean, for example, if I could see your faces, I would say to everybody now, who in here or who on the call would like to be disappointed today? Who would enjoy a nice, healthy disappointment today? And people say, Ken, what have you been drinking or smoking or whatever? Are you kidding? Nobody likes to be disappointed. So can you see how, if we're not conscious of this, sometimes we strategically limit ourselves what we expect because we don't want to be disappointed. So it takes having that courage. And many times our best lessons are through unlearning the old patterns. We need to give ourselves what? Permission not to be perfect. Something I often recommend when I'm coaching silver practitioners, you know, that go through the class, is at night when you go to bed, in fact, here's a little exercise for everybody. Review your day. And be very careful. I think it's a big mistake when people should on themselves. You know what I mean by should on yourself? I should have done this, I should have done that, and oh my God, I'm such a dummy, I can't believe I made this mistake. Big mistake, it doesn't help self-esteem. Review the day with honesty, acknowledge success, appreciate people in your life, a smiling face, something you feel good about, an accomplishment, give thanks to whoever, God, the universe, and any difficulty, setback, challenge. Acknowledge it and give yourself permission. Say, I give myself permission not to be perfect. I made a mistake, a huge mistake. I'll do better next time, and reframe it. Meaning first, forgive yourself, give yourself permission not to be perfect, and in your imagination, especially if you're visual, imagine you're back in that scene. So if you were unkind to somebody, you were impatient with someone, and you raised your voice inappropriately, you could just acknowledge that, let it go, forgive yourself, and then reframe it as if you're making a video, like you're watching a video of yourself in your life, only now you're going to sleep with your last thoughts of you being what? Patient, kinder, more compassionate. It's a very powerful skill, by the way. You'll notice big changes. So last and not least in this area, a willingness to learn. Now, as you know, there's 12, and some I would spend more time with others, and some of these are better, you know, to exercise. So, again, may I remind everybody, I'm looking to give you a bit of a roadmap to awaken further and develop your intuition. And, again, acknowledge that with me, along with me, that, you know, you're going to need to make some time on your own to study this, to follow through, and that's where you get your greatest value. So number five, fifth focusing principle would be being receptive and sensitive, meaning allowing ourselves cultivate a receptive, non-judgmental attitude. And what I mean by that is, if we go into judgment, it goes into the intellect, and it goes into fear-based thinking. In my opinion, experience, it comes from fear-based thinking, and it will cloud and distort the truth of the way things are. So as if you were a reporter walking into a room and just observing what is and embracing what is, no judgment, no discussion, no analysis, no liking, disliking, whatever, it just is. cultivating that kind of an attitude helps open us up more to be receptive to bona fide inner wisdom intuition. Again, with training, it can be developed, and it's essential. By training, actually exercising, practicing, you know, learning some skills from reliable sources and cultivating those skills through practice. Make it fun, meaningful fun, by playing games. It could be a card game or if you ever play this game with an inspirational book, have a question in your mind, something you want to understand better, or a lesson you want for today, and you open up in one of your favorite inspirational books at random, and it's uncanny, sometimes the page that we open up to. Again, was that intuitive? Who knows? Does it matter? What matters is that we're making progress, and these are tools we can use. When my children, I have three children, 32, 30, going to be 33, and the other guy's going to be 32, and then my daughter, 22. And with each of them, when they were younger and in the car and we were driving a long distance, to entertain them, I'd play games with them. Okay, I'm thinking of a fruit. What am I thinking of? Everybody, I'm thinking of a fruit. Can you smell it? What color do you get? That's right, it's red. It's delicious, sweet. Watermelon, that's right. And we'd play games like that just to encourage them to be consciously aware that we're more than what we appear to be. You know, we have other senses. Again, allow a deep breath. Number six, I went right into it, is be playful, be childlike, not childish. I mean no disrespect. However, I would say that sometimes when we look at our credentials and we look at our academic background, if you will, or our professional standing, sometimes that can create a small temporary trap. And what I mean by that is it gets us into our intellect, what some might choose to call so-called left-brain thinking, so-called, where we're focusing on analysis and reasoning and the laws of logic, which are very important, necessary. However, it's just part of the picture, isn't it? And if we're too serious, if we're triggering so much of our intellect, we get stuck in that mode of expression. And as Einstein once said, if we stay in the same mode of expression, the same level of consciousness, we're going to perpetuate the same kinds of problems. Often, when we look at some of the challenges we face, we need what? A fresh perspective. We need to make a shift in our thinking. Because if we keep doing the same old, we're going to get the same old results. So being playful, being childlike. I've learned more about this, what we in Silver call programming, of how we know literally, fact, in neuroscience, the thalamus area of the brain, the command center, does not make distinctions, like a computer, from a programming point of view, between what we vividly imagine and what we actually experience. I'll say it again. In other words, whatever we imagine and focus on and dwell on will tend to become more and more a reality in our lives if we're not careful, because it can be our best friend or our worst enemy. And it's really an art and a science behind that in learning how to cultivate and develop that. So being playful, being childlike is one such. I would also recommend something, please write this down, a question. When you have a dream, or you play a game, or you have an insight, or you're experiencing some sort of so-called coincidence, and you're not sure, ask yourself, what can I learn from this? What can I learn from this? And if you get an insight, great. If you don't, great. But rather than going crazy, going into analysis paralysis, asking simple questions, does this mean anything to me? Or what can I learn? Is a way to feed on the intuitive wisdom. Number seven, which I mentioned earlier, but I didn't label it as number seven, having trust and courage to follow your first impressions, giving yourself permission not to be perfect, allowing yourself the space to be an explorer. So what I mean by the first impression is often, well, I'm sure most everybody on the call and others have had the experience where you've had an idea, it feels great, oh yes, I can't wait, and then we talk ourselves out of it. Or we bring it up to a friend and they talk us out of it. Yes? Well, that's what I mean by exploring, having the trust to follow that first impression. And where you feel like you're making it up, usually it's the most correct. And if you compare it, because usually logic takes time. Logic wants to look at every corner, every angle, every side, where intuition is very spontaneous, very impulsive. And here's where it's tricky, because some people are very impulsive with their spending, with their investing, with their moves, with their choice of partners and relationships. And they jump from one thing to another. So we do need some healthy analysis, do need some healthy evaluating, of course. It's those first impressions, though, that if there's a projection, if we're wishfully thinking, it feels like it's intuition, but it's nothing more than us wishfully thinking. So again, it's not easy. It's really not. It takes courage. It takes time, practice. And number 8, we need some self-love, self-compassion, some acceptance and empathy. So write that down, please. You want to cultivate some acceptance and empathy. And how we can do that is by cultivating, a non-judgmental attitude, some self-acceptance. Write this one down, embracing what is. I admit, this has been, in all these years, my challenge. I work with visionaries, I've worked with the best of the best, and I'm often reminding myself that everybody has their own nuances, their own idiosyncrasies, and if we can just embrace what is and not try to change them or the situation and ask questions like, what can I do to turn it around? What can I do to work better with this person? What can I do to bring what I bring to the game, to their game, so that we can collaborate and do something and really make a difference? This kind of attitude allows intuition to flow more freely. Number 9, again, which I've repeated several times, detachment. You know, emphasize that detachment, meaning, I don't know if any of you remember Ken Kies. Ken Kies wrote a book called The Pathways, 12 Pathways. And when he was alive, I had the opportunity in the early 70s to do some intensives with Ken Kies. And there was a song that we used to sing in his intensives. When you give it all up, you get it all back. When you give it all up, you get it all back. Think about it. It doesn't mean we stop caring. It doesn't mean we stop making an effort. But it means we let our ego out of the way. We stop trying to force things and push and push and push and push. You know, we're clear about our intention. We set our intention. We evaluate. We develop a strategy. We implement that strategy. And then we let the universe go to work for us. And look more and more for that flow where it feels right, where it feels good, where it feels joyful. You heard Judy say that before. It just feels like we're liberated or joyful or, you know, there's a good feeling there. The 10th one, please write this down. We're moving close here. Would be practice. Be advised, with just a little sidebar. I'm on a headset and a phone that's giving me a message that my battery's low. If it, for some reason, clears out, I will. In fact, I'll do that now. Let me just switch. I brought another backup. Can you hear me, everybody? Judy, just let me know. Did you still hear me? Judy, you there?
I can. Yes, I can. I'm sorry. It took me a minute to get unmuted. Ken? Oh, dear. Now we've lost Ken. And I have everybody else muted. Let me unmute you all. Because Ken may call in. I'm unmuting everyone.
I'm back.
Okay, Ken's back.
Please excuse me, everybody. This is full of
no problem.
but at least I was prepared. So number, I'm so proud of myself sometimes.
Didn't you just say detachment?
That's right, I know. But you know what? It's funny, those of you who know me better, if you've been to class, I'm very playful. I have a...
You know, and I know some people that won't let anybody in.
And I'm also very serious at times. So I admit, my face just turned red, you know, because I don't like when things like that happen. So I'm frequently reminding myself, give yourself permission, you know. Life is what it is. So that being said, number 11 to write down would be record points of reference. Meaning, what we mean by points of reference is experiences. And I've mentioned this a few times, so this is kind of wrapping up and putting into perspective. If you've had a hunch and it proved to be correct, that's a well, for example, in New England, you know, people complain about the weather. Well, it's part of New England to live here. It's cold climate. You're going to get cold. You're going to get rain. You're going to get chill. It's the way it is. So be prepared. Bundle up properly. You know, dress accordingly. So if the Farmer's Almanac says 2014 we're going to have a real New England winter, we have a point of reference. We live here in New England. We know what that means. If you've ever had hot pizza right out of the oven, and you burnt your upper, you know, in your mouth. Somebody said, hey, you got some hot pizza, just came out of the oven. You have a point of reference. You know to wait till it cools down because you don't want to get burnt again. So that, what I mean by start recording, look for distinctions in the practice. It's also very helpful, number 12, to have a mastermind group, a support group, or an accountability partner. Someone you can practice with, someone to encourage you. The best way to learn something is to teach it or to share or to discuss it or to interact, to be engaged with other people. Unfortunately, in this kind of, you know, we're limited because of this being a teleclass. You know, we have a little bit of engagement and interaction, but it's not as much as if we were live in a class where we've got the synergy of the group, we've got the exercises, we've got answering the questions, and all of that plays a part. That supports. Well, you can begin to do some of that on your own with respect, you know, with groups, with family and friends for that. Another thing that came to mind while I was changing phones is we're building trust and we're looking to minimize or avoiding the naysayers. So part of a mastermind is being with people who will support our growth, who will encourage us, who resonate with us or have some of the similar values or will encourage us rather than the opposite. And if we go back to one of the obstacles we said is within the domain of our life's experience, our logic sometimes gets stuck. There's a story that many people have shared that happened, and I believe, as far as I know, it's an actual experience that happened. An 18-wheeler truck was driving through the streets of a city and the driver was not mindful of the sign, the warning, you know, of the clearance. And he got stuck, literally stuck, because his truck was not clearing it. And he had to stop as an emergency because he ran the risk of what? Doing damage to the truck and damaging, maybe causing this overpass, you know, stone bridge to collapse. So fire truck showed up, police showed up, emergency vehicles, everybody and their mothers was there, trying to figure out what to do to get this truck unstuck. And while they're doing this, a young boy, 8-year-old, is coming home from school, walking, goes by, sees all this, and he goes over to check it out, and he makes a suggestion. He tells him what? Take the air out of the tires. And by doing so, the truck dropped. It was enough to then pull it, you know, drive it out, and they did what they did. So it's interesting, that childlike attitude, cultivate that, where we don't have the conditioning, the limits within, you know, life's experience. So again, I would say to you, everybody, best way to learn is be inspired, you know, pay it forward, share with each other. I'd love to hear from you. Judy will keep me in touch, or if you want to connect with me, I would be thrilled to hear from you. A bonus focusing principle would be have fun. Make it fun. Make it something that you enjoy, that's joyful, then you're more likely to take the time and to practice and to work with it. And I know Judy had mentioned we were going to go through 15 possible ways intuitive messages can be received, and I'll just be very brief because I know we're getting close to the time that we've, I want to respect the time and your schedule, is physically and mentally, it could be a hunch, a message, an image, a memory, or a song, a relevant dream, internal sensing or hearing. An insight suddenly pops into one's mind. Or there's a new realization of how ideas are connected. Sometimes when you're reading a book, you get that. Or a gradual awareness as to how to proceed. It could be an awareness that events are flowing in a certain direction through the mind, or there's a glimpse of the big picture. It could be a muscle contraction or a sudden upset stomach. Neuroscientists call this the second brain, our gut, you know, the stomach. It's loaded with neurons. It has an intelligence, by the way. There is a great deal of truth to what's in your gut. But you've got to ask the question, what does this mean? What can I learn from this? There's an energy flow or increase relative to the action being taken, meaning it's getting easier or more difficult, both of which is feedback. We need feedback. There's an unexpected change in one's feelings, or my favorite, synchronistic experiences, what Carl Jung defined as synchronicity, or now in psychology they call them significant growth experiences, when any two complementary forces come together to make something better. And 14 would be an unhappy experience, which may lead to something better, like a downsizing, which sometimes turns out to be something in your best interest. Or all 15, all options but one in a situation disappear. So what about you? Please make a note. And when we, you know, say so long for now, when you have your intuition, what, is it a feeling? Is it a visual image? An inner voice? Pay attention to that. Take a note. And I would like to just a little shout out to the man who passed away, who started this back in 1944, Jose Silva. He's said his greatest discovery you'll ever make is the potential of your mind. Welcome to the next phase of human evolution on the planet. So may I say in closing that I thoroughly enjoyed doing this. I love this work. I feel like I was born to do it. If you'd like to expand and develop your intuition, that's what the Silva program is all about. It's a very specific program, step by step. I invite you to check it out, take a look, see if it's a fit for you in your life. We have instructors all over the world. I personally teach in Chicago, Boston, and Connecticut this core program, which we call Life System and Intuition Training. And if I may, just my website, very easy to find, Silva Method of Connecticut. If you just Google Silva Method of Connecticut, you'll find the website. And it's got the schedule. It's got a ton of information. We're redoing the website, but it's still up, the old one, improving it. So if you'd like to expand and develop your intuition and achieve these results we mentioned, in my experience, this program that Mr. Silva put together most definitely will do that and then some. If you want to give a call to me, you want to have a chat, you can reach me at 860-674-1009. And I just remembered, Judy did put out the link to my website and all the announcements, so you have that.
Yes.
So let me turn back to Judy, our wonderful sponsor, who is so gracious to allow me to have some fun with you today. Judy, are you there?
Yes, I am. Can you hear me?
Yes.
All right, great. Oh, Ken, thank you so much. This is so rich and so full of ideas and suggestions and principles. It's kinesthetically, I'm just vibrating with a lot of excitement and energy, so thank you. I know that we've said this was an hour and a half, and many people will have to go, but I'm wondering if you would be willing to stay on the line, say, for 10 minutes more or so, if people may have questions. They really, you know, there wasn't any time because you had so much to share with us, but perhaps there are some questions people would have. Would you be willing to stay just a little longer?
Absolutely. I'm more than happy to do that. Sure, please.
All right. So those of you who need to go, thank you for being with us. And we'll stay on the line. We'll do a few more questions. And then when that goes complete, we'll close the call. And I'm going to unmute
everybody, if you are trying to talk and don't hear anything, then star 6 should do it. But I got everybody unmuted except somebody. Hold on. Okay, you're all unmuted. If you have a question, please ask it.
And this is Amy Mullins in Michigan. How are you?
Hey, Amy. I'm doing great, thanks. Better. I think I'm going to see you in April, end of April in Chicago.
I hope. Well, April, I have to, unfortunately, my father is very ill, so I have to make a trip to North Carolina, where I'm originally from. But I am coming to see you either the end of May for your special or sometime over the summer when you have another one in Chicago. But I have to tell you, this was so fabulous, and I can't wait to meet you in person.
Oh, thank you, Amy. Appreciate that.
I do have a question.
Yeah, please.
As I'm doing the home study for the Silva Life System as well, there is constant talk about points of reference. And what you're saying is not what I've been hearing on that. So could you maybe go a little bit more in depth about that for me?
Oh, yeah, sure. There's several ways to look at points of reference. First of all, it depends on someone's background, you know, with respect to their level of experience. So on one level, when somebody learns a skill like in Silva, we teach dynamic meditation, how to relax, stay focused in spite of it all, how to, you know, sleep better or manage pain or control a habit. So when you apply a principle that you learn and you get results, that becomes a point of reference that builds confidence.
Okay.
That you can turn back and say, yes, okay, this is making sense, which is important, but then it creates an openness. And, you know, I find that when we do the 4-day, one thing I like about that is when I come back day 2, there's so much more openness. The room, you know, Judy's mentioning about the vibration she's feeling. I
feel
that in the room. And by the time we get to day 4, I'm literally watching transformation before my eyes and people's physiology in their face. And that's a point of reference for me that, you know, the participants are responding. However, when we get into day 3 and day 4, the intuition aspect,
because
it's very challenging to keep it with this topic, we do exercises called mental projection where we're exploring our subjective thoughts. We're working creatively. We're doing what we call mental projection exercises, you know, with our imagination. That becomes a point of reference in recognizing whether we're visual and where our strengths are. And then there's more to it. We do something called psychometry. And what we call in Silva, very unique to Silva, caseworking. And both of these are actual intuitive exercises where you're given a challenge. You know, in fact, I do a third one that I've introduced where people are asked to come up with information. There's no way they could have known physically, objectively. It's out of the realm of their, you know, life experience. And then they're given feedback, yes or no, or you were pretty close. And sometimes people are way off base. And often people are 100% accurate, 80% accurate, far more than they thought. And that becomes a point of reference because you begin to recognize, had this thought. I hope it makes sense because it's hard to put into words, but when you experience it, that becomes a point of reference because you're getting the feedback which is necessary. And Amy, since you're doing the home study for everyone's benefit, on my website, Silver Method of Connecticut, there's a home study page, and they're available. We never had them in the early days. It's nothing like the class live, but they're excellent. People get good value, and it's not necessary to do before the class. The only challenge is with the intuition part, those home study. What's missing is the actual interaction and experience that we do, you know, better than 60% of the time, and that's what really boosts the confidence with these points of reference.
Okay. I appreciate that. I'm as an energy worker and life coach, I could not imagine not being able to feel. So with that, it totally makes sense to me now. So I appreciate that.
Well, since you're an energy worker, you're welcome. We do work with the hands too, even at a distance, much like Reiki now teaches, or therapeutic touch. So it can be done more subjectively. So in my experience, a lot of what we're doing in Silva is managing our energy. We're working at an energetic level.
I love it.
You know, fact, that's kind of my hope and intention to collaborate, that, you know, that people can learn these as tools, just simply tools, a set of tools that they can mm-hmm. integrate in their own life, in their own practice, in their own profession, so that they do, you know, you do what you do better.
And awesome.
If I may add, Amy mentioned about May. May is my anniversary, my 43rd year with Silva, and it's actually Memorial Day weekend when I first did the Silva, and it's happened to fall on the weekend, so I'm doing a Friday through Monday, Monday being Memorial Day, kind of a holiday special, which is, forgive me for being kind of sentimental, so for me it's in my very first class I went through, and when I first was teaching, that's how I used to do it, so it's like going back memory lane. Anyway, how about others? Any other questions from others? Thanks, Amy.
Hello, Ken.
Yes.
Yes, my name, it's Eric in Toronto. Thank you really a great deal for what you shared. I just want to step back to the first question I heard was basically, what is the truth and what is not the truth? How do you personally discern the intuitive voice from the projection, wishful thinking side of things?
So you're asking me, meaning me personally or
yes.
in general? That's a, if I may say, Eric, let me answer it and preface by saying that's a deep question. And, you know,
it's one that keeps coming to me over 30 years, and it's just the one I keep exploring because it seems to really go to the heart of things.
I would agree, and I don't make a claim personally. I think that the more I know, the less I know. And the more I realize there's more to learn. So when I say the truth, I didn't mean, although you could, I didn't mean so much in that deep philosophical sense because, you know, we create our own truth, don't we? I was using it in the context of, like you said, the projection that I find from practice, by paying attention to my kinesthetic feelings or the visualization, and sometimes it's me projecting, I hope, I really want this to happen, yeah. And that's not that flow state, that's me imposing my hopes, not that there's anything wrong with this, so I'm not going to judge it, but it's imposing my hopes and aspirations.
Totally get that.
And I find that it's kind of a dance you do, isn't it? And then sometimes, you know, fear plays into the projection and distorts the truth. So to go back to what Amy was asking about those points of reference, what I personally found very helpful and what I encourage and coach others to do the same is by journaling and acknowledging and paying attention as things unfold, you know, in your own life, you begin to recognize distinctions, patterns of thought or feeling. And it's really a process. To me, it's like peeling, you know, you've heard this analogy maybe, peeling layers of an onion. And it's one of the, for example, in July, I'm going to be in Lithuania conducting an instructor training. I love to do that because I'm with my colleagues, just taking a look at what we do, why we do it, and exploring those, you know, those deeper connections. I hope that answers your question.
Gives me a feel. I would maybe second if I could. Is there a way that you get intuitive resonance that something is on versus off, or is it more about the distinctions between lack of clarity and clarity, if I can describe it that way?
Yes, I would say some have called it the language of the soul or the language of intuition. When you're having an idea or a feeling, and it feels right, like it's comfortable. You're, and I'm not talking about excited or yeah, that kind of, where it's almost effortless, and you're moving along, and I'm beginning to have synchronicities of experience, you know, attracting people or situations that lend to that. I use that as feedback, I'm moving in the right direction. There's a process I like to use that we actually teach in the Silver class, and that is at night, I thank Source Energy for anything, you know, just appreciate that life is good and all the opportunities. And I feel like I'm reporting in, if you know what I mean, looking at what I've experienced up to now, things that have unfolded, and you can attempt this and often say, thank you, Source, for guidance, for insight, to help me continue to make a difference, to do the right thing, to make those distinctions, to, you know, follow the truth. If I may add,
part of one of my pet peeves is, and maybe you share it, is our media is so biased to the negative. And we also know that our media does not give the whole picture, and not only biased. So part of what I was also thinking and relating to was getting to the truth of the way things really are, and not what we're being told by others.
Hmm. Thanks for your insights.
Oh, you're welcome. Thank you for asking.
Hi, this is Dr. Lynn. I have a question. For
hey,
those
Dr.
of
Lynn.
Us who have been in Silva for 30 years or more, there are several of us on the call, and unfortunately I have found Silva after I had been spiritually guided for 4 degrees. I wish I'd found it sooner. I was wondering if you could summarize for us what's changed in the last 30, 40 years with
oh my
Silva.
Gosh.
Can you said that it's always being updated. You're always updating. So
yeah,
could you
yeah.
give us a synopsis of what's
sure.
what's new now?
Mm-hmm. Dr. Lynn, I'm laughing with you because that's a big task. So I'll do my best with that. I'm the right guy to ask, though, that question because I'm the senior most person in the organization.
Mm-hmm.
And with that. So the
mm-hmm.
first thing, when we first started in the early classes in the mid-60s, late-60s, and then I came on board 71, often, so here's what I mean by the update, we'd have to tell, and you may remember this, gee, Judy, I don't know why this works. I can't really explain to you, but I know that if you do thus and so and use this technique we call mirror the mind, you'll get results, and I'd like to hear from you. In the recent years, it's become much easier to explain because there's so much research going on in neuroscience.
Right,
basically
right, right.
Documenting thing. If you look at what Mr. Silva was proposing in 1966, he was criticized. We were investigated by every government agency, the medical community, alienated. It was really kind of unfortunate, but he was so stubborn and persistent. Where now, I feel I could literally bury people with all the research that's basically substantiating age-old wisdom, and now we have the language. So
mm-hmm.
when I say about updating, for me personally, I'm more science-based in my presentation,
mm-hmm.
and I tend to collaborate or study a lot of neuroscience or biological sciences, and when it relates to explaining our principles or techniques, I bring that into the class, you know, more just to help people recognize where it's coming from.
Mm-hmm.
So you'll notice in the class the way we're training our people to present the material has been greatly updated in terms of the language and what we explain, and it's my hope and part of my job and mission that instructors have moved away, forgive me for saying this, however, it's true, from the airy-fairy kind of misquoting or making misleading claims, if you know what I mean,
mm-hmm.
with that. So there's been a big change that way. The other thing, too, is we had a big renaissance around late 2006, early 2007. And when you took Silva, it was a 4-day program.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what Mr. Silva researched from 1944 to 1966. And then somewhere in the mid-1980s, somebody convinced Jose Silva to condense it to a 2-day intensive format. And it worked, but I was always wary of new instructors because there was like no margin for error and it was very
mm-hmm.
intense.
Yeah.
I acknowledge to you and anybody listening to this, that was our biggest mistake. I went along with it, although I didn't have much of a choice. I mean, you always have a choice, you know what I mean,
mm-hmm.
you know, with that. And Laura Silva at the time had started working with us in the 80s, and she left for about 7 years. She's now back. Mr. Silva passed away, and she's now Laura Silva Quesada, the president, and we're having a bit of a renaissance. We're back to the 4-day, and part of what I do is I travel around the world getting our instructors back in sync, moving away from a 2 or 3-day format to what it needs to be, 4 days. But also, in doing that, sometimes a big change that happened was the family looked, and it was very embarrassing. I look back, it's actually part of the time when I met Judy Neal, and I was exploring, looking at the things, because it was a very challenging, you know, part of our history that I'm certainly not proud of. But the good news is when the family got together, they said, this is embarrassing. So they got together and began to look hard and fast at what we were doing, what was working, what wasn't. So a big change, I think you might find there's a lot more spiritual expression in the class. There's more
wonderful
expression. So all the things you remember, like sleep control, mirror of the mind, the laboratory and counselors, the big relaxation technique, hand levitation, glove anesthesia, the mental project, we still do them, but now we've added psychometry. There's a lot more, especially when I conduct the class discussion like we did today about intuition in a research background, if you will. And then we talk a lot more about source energy and use our intuition to make decisions, you know, with ourselves. Especially, I would say this about, we also now have added a lot more working with resource states, how to build confidence by studying and reliving moments of excellence and how to lock that in and bring it with you to avoid performance anxiety, to stay calm and focused. It's about, so in the first 2 days, there's about 10% new material. In the second 2 days, which we now call Silver Intuition System, there's about 40% new material.
That's wonderful.
So I would say big change is the tone and the way we present it.
Well, it sounds like you're right on track with the changes while keeping the original, going back to keep the original integrity, because you really do need the 4 days for the repetition, for people to get it installed in their neuroscience as well as their psychology.
Thank you for that. I thank you for that support and encouragement, because I agree, and I'm a little bit stubborn that way. And in the organization, I'll just put it this way: as I, some parts of the world, you know, some days I'm talking with people from three or four or five different, thank God for Skype, countries, and going over that, because what you just said. And not only that, I would very respectfully encourage, come back to the class. As you know, the tuition is a one-time payment. You pay the C charge. And in the intuition system, there's a little bit, there's more information. Rather than another new course, we added it, so graduates get a really big discount on that aspect. But more importantly, it's like peeling layers of an onion. And every time you go through, when people go through any personal development, any growth experience, you're familiar. You know what to expect. So people tend to sit more comfortably, more openly, and you get more, and you'll say, I didn't hear that in my class. And even if you were just with me last month, because you're hearing it differently. And that's one of the things I've always enjoyed, that I've seen so many people come and go, so many organizations, and here we are nearly 50 years later, still in the community, still, you know, waving our flag, so to speak, even though sometimes we're like invisible to the world, but we're doing our best to become more positively visible.
Well, you know, what I deeply respect the most, you know, have being old enough to have longevity as a professional intuitive leadership type as well as a Silva graduate, as I grew up intuitive before Silva, is the fact that you have resisted the constant pressure, at least in the United States, to be more superficial, more quick and cheaper. And I mean, that it's an incredible pressure, and the internet has brought a lot of wonderful things but also makes that worse. And, you know, there, I always say only depth, in one of my quotes in one of my books, only depth gives you freedom. And you get that. You know, you get that and you walk that talk. And I really honor that, because if without that depth, we don't have the personal transformation or the professional development at the level needed to really make change on the planet. You know, a few superficial techniques is not going to do it.
I would love to meet you and or talk more, because I so resonate with that. It's, I admit, it's part of a challenge as part of the leadership, you know, in the organization. That I've often reminded, if we're truly about transformation, if we truly want to make a difference, then people need to feel this and live it in their heart, in their gut, in their soul, and that's not going to happen, you know, quick, you know, flash.
Right.
And
it's
also,
not a one-hour webinar, you know, like most of the teachers, their whole thing is a one-hour webinar. And
some people in the organization have said to me that I'm painfully honest. I'm not going to mention names on the call, but I am. I believe in being very transparent. I'll answer any question. And we have people who are now marketing for the Silver organization online. And since they started in 2007, they do a great job, and I love them. However, I've constantly been in their face with, you can't say this, this is misleading, or this, you know what I mean? I don't know how many hundreds of hours in the early years, and I'm still concerned, because you're right, it's a big pressure. You know,
it's
to
a
look
huge, the internet marketing thing is a huge pressure to behave in a certain way to get numbers. And it's very compelling and seductive. And so every organization needs somebody like you or me to QAQC, you know, quality control, quality assurance, and say, now, wait a minute.
And we need more and more people like you in organizations
and you.
Like ours. You know, Judy
well,
and I
this
had...
This is Judy. Yeah. I want to kind of throw... build on what you're saying, but give another or ask about another perspective. Because, Ken, in the beginning of this call, you were talking about how workshops are happening more and more through teleconference, through online. It certainly does give us an opportunity to reach more people. It helps the environment by people don't have to travel and burn jet fuel or burn gas. It's cheaper because you don't have to pay for hotels. But there's not the depth that Lynn is talking about. And yet, I remember my first experience back in 92. I ran an email group of about 15 people talking about spirituality in the workplace just through email. We didn't have much technology back then. Yeah. That group bonded so close and went so deep. And part of it was the anonymity. It was just a very strange, unpredictable thing. And so I'm always curious about what's emerging, what's over the horizon. And certainly one of the things that's emerging is virtual courses. And so I'm just wondering if this isn't a both and, the kind of high tech, high touch. Is there some way that the Silva method, this spiritual work, this consciousness, can also expand through high tech when high touch isn't available to people or in addition to high touch? What's your thought about where the Silva method might go with this technology part in addition or instead of? I'm not even sure what I'm asking, but kind of what's your intuition about the future?
I get what you're asking. In fact, Judy, it's like you're reading my mind. You could be my coach here because what you're suggesting is happening and has been happening already.
Mm-hmm.
So in one sense, I'm considered old school, you know, high touch. And I want to embrace what's unfolding and be open to it and recognize, you know, what can be done. And I can make a long list of why live has more depth, more higher likelihood of having an impact on people. However, the Silva program has been offered online, like with series of videos, answering questions.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes live streaming. Laura Silva just did one in Kazakhstan, and they streamed it throughout, you know, the Russian provinces. And it was huge.
Yeah.
How many people, because they could not make it to Kazakhstan. There are CD programs now that have all the meditations and the presentations. And when you go on the Facebook page, or I hear from the, they are getting, like you said, they're bonding, getting really great results. I am noticing, though, and maybe I'm looking for this, there's a depth that's missing. That when you talk with Dr. Lynn as a, how can I say it, a mature, seasoned practitioner in this field, I didn't want to say old timer. But seasoned.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
I was watching.
I know. By the way, I'm in my 60s too, and you know, I don't mind relating to that. But we know there's a lot of different reasons why. But Judy brings up a good point, because for some people, maybe it's economically, maybe it just may not be. So, yeah, they are, and they're implementing that, and it's my hope that we have a balance of the two.
Mm-hmm.
So that is available, and it has been done periodically, you know, classes, and even doing these, like I did with you now, the group. I've been doing these for the past 4 years with Silva Group and having friends, and I'm getting wonderful, like tonight, some of the people this afternoon, feedback that this really helped, made a difference. So I think it's, you know, we want to use everything at our disposal to empower people, is my thinking, that, and to embrace it. And I admit, I'm doing my best to embrace the technology and to learn from it. In fact, every week I invest many hours in just studying the technology and looking at what's going on and looking for authenticity with some of the, quote, marketing gurus. Does that answer, Judy?
Yes, it does. Thank you. Yeah, I'm just playing with the idea myself that when we're on a call like this, or if we're Skyping, or using some other virtual technology, that if we've really been working on our consciousness and if source energy is working on us, and I think both things are happening, that if we were to set an intention that it can be depth when we're working together, then it would be so.
I agree. I think so. For example, you know Dr. Lynn, I'm getting to know her, but you and I have met and we've had some connection and interaction. And I feel a depth of interaction with you. I mean, our interactions are short. You know, we have that. We've also had that physical connection. You know what I mean? So I find
that... But Lynn and I haven't. We've never met.
Oh, I thought you did.
And yet, but we've had the connection for years and years.
Decades. Oh. Right.
Oh, there you go. There goes my...
yeah.
What I was going to say was...
There goes Terry. Yeah.
When I finish a class, for example, let's say I do a 4-day immersion. Whenever I finish one, as part of a service, it's kind of evaluated bonus to the group. I then, within a few weeks, a month, have a review, 90 minutes, going over highlights of the program, the 4 days, what worked, answering questions, a couple of guided meditations, and that's been very powerful. So I've been thinking, based on what you asked me, is because, you know, they're in the class with me, we know each other, we spent a lot of time, and now we're reinforcing that. Much like when people, you say we're emailing, when people have a mastermind group and are talking on the phone or emailing. I know I sound old school, but I like hearing people's voice.
Uh-huh.
And now I've been doing more and more Skyping, like I've been interviewing people from different parts of the world who are applying to be instructors, because I like to be able to see their face and see how they're responding to what I'm saying and watch their eyes. And it's another channel to give you information. So I think all of it's valuable, and the more tools we have, the more we can really make that difference that we're striving for. So
I have one last question for you, because I'm going to need to go, and all of us have been online for 2 amazing hours because they've just flown. But my last question for you is, what's unfolding for you that is still kind of in the area of the mystery, that it's calling you but you can't quite describe it or see it yet? You just sense it, you know, in a vague direction kind of way. So, of course, you can't give me a specific answer, but just something to play with.
I can't give you an answer because it's been on my mind for some time. I feel like I'm being groomed for something more.
Mm-hmm.
And not necessarily with Silva. It could be with that.
Mm-hmm.
Collaboration comes to mind. Whenever I study or listen and really feel what that means in the true sense of it, that really resonates. So I see myself as a collaborator, as a mediator, so to speak, as a bridge
mm-hmm.
between worlds. I'm often in different worlds, very straight-laced, very ultra-conservative, you know, where I'm very mindful of what I'm saying and how I'm saying it, to then on the other extreme with people who are way out there. So that's what and I feel that. Funny you said the same thing. I don't have an answer, and it's one of the things that I've gravitated with this spirituality in the workplace. When I read Michael Lerner's The Politics of Meaning, and I discovered him in that work by accident, watching C-SPAN when he was doing something in D.C., and then when I met you in East Haven, you were part of that, by the way, because you had some
mm-hmm.
consultants, and you were, you know, introducing in some of the calls that I participated with you. It just feels right. I feel like this is important.
Mm-hmm.
This is something I should do, but I don't know how the heck I'm going to do it. I even have a business website, and I've done for organizations presentations. They haven't been as deep as I want them to be, if you hear me. They've been more, you know, addressing certain skill sets that they need, and that's okay. It just hasn't tickled my fancy or sparked my passions.
Yeah, sounds like you and I have some more stuff to talk about. And it sounds like you and Lynn have some things to talk about, too.
Mm-hmm.
That was spoken like a true edgewalker. How beautiful.
Mm-hmm.
I love your answer.
Thank you. And that's why I reached out to you in suggesting this, because, you know, mm-hmm. even in doing things like this, it is there's a commercial aspect that, of course, I want people to take the class with me. Why?
Yeah.
Because I think it's the greatest thing, and I think it will empower them, be a wonderful tool, and it's a great value for that. And it's what I do, you know, to support myself and my family. But I'll tell you what I do feel as an edgewalker, when it becomes about the money I'm gone. I'm done.
Mm-hmm.
So I've done things in my life strategically with investments and other things and so on so that I don't have that pressure. And at one time in my career when silver business was not doing well for me, I made mistakes when I moved to Connecticut. I bought a house. Now I have a mortgage. My wife is pregnant, our first child. My business kind of collapsed. I made some big bonehead mistakes. So I went out and I loaded trucks for UPS and I waited tables. I mean, I nearly killed myself because I was from 4 in the morning to 9 loading trucks, and then I'm waiting tables most of the other day. But it helped me to generate cash to subsidize my passion because I don't want to be in a class. I got to have this, you know, to pay the bills.
So there's an authenticity to the way you've lived that really makes you relate to where people have been and how they think. And your story is such a beautiful turnaround story that it's got to inspire others. You know, the one theme I've heard you say throughout this call is collaboration. And so I think what I want to underscore that for those on the call and those listening to the recording, I hear Ken saying, I want to collaborate. And if you're responding to that in any kind of way that you think maybe you've got a way to collaborate with Ken, please write to him, call him. I know, Ken, you'd love to follow up on these exploratory conversations. Maybe something really cool could emerge. If not, at least there's a friendship and a connection.
Exactly. Sometimes I've been doing this regularly, and sometimes it develops into a really good friendship where we become accountability partners. We help each other. Sometimes it becomes, you know, work sharing that I'm in the midst of. And I would say this in closing. Maybe you like this. This will sound strange. I'm a lifer with Silva. You know, and I'm 43 years, and I'm their training director, their senior guy. I happen to be their top guy in North America for the past 4 years. They now tell me internationally. And that's not important. I don't even pay attention to that. That's what the CFO tells me, you know, stuff like that, the business side. But when I hear people, my colleagues, I'll just say this, say, hey, we're the greatest thing on the planet, and this is the best program, I shy away from that, and that turns my stomach. In my heart, I might feel that way, but that's not honest. That's not genuine or authentic. That's like closing the door to collaboration, in my opinion. How can we possibly learn from each other if we maintain that kind of an attitude? So for any of my colleagues who might be listening to this, that would be my message to them, that we need to recognize we're all here in this together, doing our part, making a difference. And the more, and frankly, I think we all need the help, too, because you know, we're still a minority.
I want to thank you for that. That is just amazing. In my prayer and meditation, just the day before I received this email from you about this call, it was about this. It was about collaboration. It was about getting with like-minded people, spiritually connected, divinely connected people. So I really, really appreciate that, and getting back to the simplicity of it all, just
You're
love,
welcome. And I hope people who had to sign off because of the timing will listen to this. I didn't realize you were recording, Judy. That's great. Thank you for doing that.
Yeah, I'll send you a copy of it. Amy, thank you so much for joining us. And anybody else that is not a part of the Edgewalker newsletter, if you want to know about future calls and other things we're doing, our website is www.edgewalkers.org, or you can email me, Judy, J-U-D-I, at edgewalkers.org, and I can put you on the newsletter list so that you know what else is going on. So love to stay in touch.
Yes, thank you so much. You guys take care.
Thank you. Thanks for this, Judy.
You take care. Yes, thanks again, Ken.
You're welcome.
Thank you, Ken.
Thank you so much. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Bye, everybody.